good afternoon. Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Hello, Willis.
Hello, Aaron.
So, I just wanted to say that we almost always do a free promotion, actually. We do free promotions for businesses we've intersected with during the week that are fantastic. And my vote goes to Budget Printing, but I have to look up their details. I will give them at the next break. But Budget Printing saved us during the election. They did a lot of good printing for us in a really, really speedy time frame and at very, very reasonable. They're not lying. You know, a lot of times it says Budget Printing, but it's not really budget. No, they are. They're on Bocelli Lane here in Reading, and they're terrific. I will give you their info at the next opportunity when I look them up. I forgot their business card. And probably need to shut our door there. It's kind of loud. So our next guest, we were chatting with AJ Rice in the first hour, and I never got to the part where he had done some work with South Africa. He listed all the same people that our guest this hour, Dr. Harry Booyens, has spoken about many, many times. And in his book, White Privilege, the White Privilege album, actually, and why am I echoing myself? No, I'm only echoing myself to myself. Anyway, he did a terrific job with it. So Harry is an internationally recognized, multiple award-winning PhD defense and aerospace physicist, originally from South Africa with a 360-year bloodline in that country. Probably better update that, I suppose. We're into probably longer since we've been chatting with him for years and years. He lives with his family on the forested slopes outside of Vancouver, Canada. His life as a scientist exposed him to many of the realities of the Cold War and the period immediately following the fall of the Berlin Wall. It included interaction with the United States and British defense establishment. He applies his lifetime of research and interpretive skills to the history of genealogy, history and genealogy, and writes with factual accuracy and engaging style on these subjects. So he is all about the hard evidence, but we're going to chat politics today. He has a really interesting viewpoint because coming from South Africa, which for those of you who don't know, bottom line, what we learned from Harry is that if we would have lost the Revolutionary War, we would be South Africa right now. That was kind of the upshot of the whole thing. And now he lives in Canada where he has to deal with Justin Trudeau, who's kind of like Gavin Newsom, only worse.
Yeah.
Mostly worse, I think. Maybe. I don't know. All right, Harry. We can go wherever you'd like. We chatted for so long yesterday. It's like I was terrified. I thought, oh, my God, we talked for like 3 hours playing around on the stupid Skype to get it to work. And I told you, Bill will be our shill. He wasn't in the conversation, so he'll bring all the fresh information.
Well, Aaron, first of all, thank you very much for having me on your show. It's appreciated. I think the second thing is congratulations to yourselves and your listenership, which I presume is slightly to the right of the general middle, or maybe it's now to the left of the new middle. I don't know. Anyway, the right thing has happened in the United States, and I have to confess that when it became clear that Donald Trump had won, I couldn't help crying with relief. As a grown old grizzled gray-haired guy, the emotion was a bit much. So I guess I want to express my thanks to the people of America for doing the right thing finally. Winston Churchill once said that Americans can be counted on to do the right thing after first trying everything else.
Well, I have to say, I think we proved that point. After 4 years of Joe Biden and 8 years of Barack Obama, yeah.
And I guess I should explain why maybe I have some reason to be on your show. I mean, there's 330 million Americans to choose from. There may be more now. And there's probably like 35 million Canadians who generally would have a better general knowledge than me about the entire North America. So why pick this gray-haired, difficult South African guy who's now been living in Canada for 25 years? There's two reasons as far as I'm concerned. The one is, I've already lived the future that you were heading headlong into. You were sliding down that slope so fast it was leaving me breathless. I know what it took for it all to happen in South Africa, and you were going down that slope way faster. I don't know whether people have even the vaguest idea of the horror that you have spared yourselves in this election. I don't think people understand it. I don't think folks in the general West, in the Northern Hemisphere, and places like Australia where there's no really big challenges, I don't think they appreciate just how fragile our civilization is. I don't think they, in general, appreciate just how fortunate they are, and in particular, the people who hang to the left and who try to break everything that's useful all the time, they have no idea about these basic principles that they rely on to cause the havoc that they do. It's a horror to behold for someone like me who's had his country destroyed. And in several cases, it's the exact same characters. I mean, individual human beings who caused it. And they were doing it to you. So I will expand on that a little bit later in. So the one reason is, which I could sum up in the following phrase, is that I've already taken the bullet that you as a nation dodged in this election. I know how it ends. Number two is, I'm on here to, I was going to say, to beg anyone that has any influence to get on a telephone, get on, I don't know what medium, but get Trump to appoint Cash Patel. Whatever you do, he has to be the boss of the FBI. For crying out loud, guys, you got to get him there. And I woke up this morning to the news telling me that he's appointed Cash Patel.
Like, it's funny because we talked about that yesterday.
Yeah, he had 330 million people to choose from, and honest to God, he chose the guy I wanted.
Isn't that okay? Funny?
And there's a reason, a very good reason, I wanted Cash Patel. And it's not just because he's already demonstrated that he can go after the deep state and all of that. That's not the only reason. So let me take this second one first. And that has to, the reason why I'm so anxious to see Cash Patel on this list is that his family, his parents, were escapees of tyranny in Africa. They escaped Idi Amin, tried to get out to Kenya, and then eventually ended up, I think, in Canada, actually, and then in the U.S. I'm on, under correction of that very last little step. And that family knows in its DNA what this horror is that my folks are living in South Africa. And I know I can say that because I know three other people of Indian extraction here in Vancouver, in British Columbia, in Canada. I know three. And I get on with them like brothers and sisters, because we don't even have to say anything. We understand one another about what this monster is that we've had to fight and lose against, and that you now dodged. So he has very good DNA calibration. I can count on him. You know, if you wake him up in the middle of the night, his reflexes are going to be in the right direction. That's why I wanted that man there. Okay? And he needs to be backed up, and he needs to be given enough freedom to take apart this machine that's been coming after everybody. Now, there is a... well, maybe I should shut up for a minute, and this is your show.
No. We invite you on so you can tell us stories. Come on, well, Dr. Harry, tell us a story.
Okay.
Now, we like your vantage point is unique. There are not, I guess, I haven't gone on some exhaustive search, but I don't know people who have studied the politics of South Africa and the rest of the world, and then applied kind of an American lens to it. It's a really unique perspective that you have, and I think you've always been a really, you've always been a cautionary tale.
Yeah, I'm kind of this grizzled old gray guy standing on the horizon, you know, taking his meds and waving his arms and screaming at everybody, "Wake up, please! For God's sakes, wake up!"
Well, they were calling you a racist long before they were calling us all racist. That's a relatively new, kind of a new thing for us. I remember you telling us about the cruise ship guy.
Yes.
tell us about the cruise ship guy again for those people who maybe haven't met you before.
Well, there's a couple of things like that. So maybe for the first, there's sort of a couple of spots in my life that served as a calibration point. And the first thing to mention, maybe by way of just, folks who haven't met me on your show before, yes, I was indeed born in South Africa. I was born way back in 1953 as they were shutting down the Korean War. And for those who don't know, even before I was born, Mandela's party had sent people to China to go and look for military help. Now, life moved on, and ran about when I was homing in on being 4 years old, my mother hoisted me on her arm, and she did the weirdest thing. She walked me across the road to the grassy knoll. Yes, we had grassy knolls there as well. She walked me to the grassy knoll. There was no hidden guy with a gun there. But she pointed up at the stars, and she showed me a moving star. And that was so cool that I decided on that moment that I was not going to be a farmer like my grandfather, nor was I going to be a railway engineer like my father said I should one day be. I wanted to be one of the men who put that stuff up there. So my mother said, it's a scientist who put it up there. It wasn't 100% correct, but that was close enough. So I was going to be a scientist. Meanwhile, I was watching F-86 Sabres flying around in our skies, because the South African Air Force used F-86s built by Canadair in Canada, having helped the U.S. in Korea, where, for what it's worth, the U.S. Air Force always played the first few bars of the South African anthem at Air Force events by way of thanks for South Africa's help in the Korean air effort. Anyway, things moved on, and Harry here got a little bit older, and he discovered in 1960, or just before that really, my mother worked at a magazine distribution company, And what they didn't sell in the particular week for an edition of this paper, she would at the end of the week bring back home. So I was plied with magazines, books, journals, you name it. There was never a shortage of reading material. Of course, it included some Superman comics and Batman. I knew all the superheroes. But it included things like Time Magazine, Life, later Newsweek, etc. And so that when Gary Powers got shot down in 1960, I was completely on top of it. I knew about the arsenic pill that he didn't take, all that stuff. I knew about him being swapped out. I knew about the trial, all of that stuff. When 1962 came around, I had enough brains and background to understand what a nuclear war meant, so that when the missile crisis happened, I was terrified out of my skull because I had already seen pictures of what people looked like that had been irradiated during Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So in a certain sense, I was, what's the word? Not overeducated. I was over-informationalized, if there's such a word.
Yeah, you were exposed to things that
most kids
wouldn't. You know, Harry, hold on for 5 seconds. We've got to take a really quick break, and then we will come back. Our guest is Harry Booyans. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. Out there without care, yeah, I was out of touch, but it wasn't because I didn't know enough, I just knew too much.
It's kind of a mad world. Yeah, running in circles is never good. Hey, you know, just for reference, at wethepeopleradio.us, we do have a tab up top labeled South Africa. It has shows that go back to 2018, May of 2018. That was when we first met Dr. Harry Booyans, and he spoke about the history of the Dutch. I think you will be fascinated by the history in South Africa and how that parallels U.S. history. He's really done an excellent job of lining that out for us over the years, really. Been doing this a long time with him. I think you'll like it, and it's really worth listening. All of our archives, by the way, are commercial free. They are MP3 files. They're free to listen to. They're not copyrighted in any way. You can download them, share them, do whatever you like. We make them available as a learning tool. And if you have people that you think would be interesting to have on the show, get a hold of us. All of our information is on there at wethepeopleradio.us. All right, back to you, Dr. Booyans.
Okay. So by way of calibration points, so like maybe I should just mention that in 1963, my mother was a huge fan of Jackie Kennedy, and she followed her for all sort of matters, fashion and all that kind of stuff. And, of course, I was listening to Kennedy and all that. So I want folks to know that I grew up with that Life magazine front cover of John saluting his father's casket.
Oh, yeah.
That was on my wall. Okay. In sunny old South Africa, there was nothing between me and the South Pole except the Russian Navy. Okay. And like every regular kid, I was part of a little kiddie gang when I was about 10. And, of course, they made me the scientist of the team and all that kind of stuff. I started building crystal radio sets and stuff like that. And so I started picking up strange things on that set. And then I thought, forget the crystal set, get some better stuff in there. And then I realized I was listening to Voice of America, Radio Moscow, BBC, Deutsche Welle, and Radio Peking.
It's a fairly eclectic mix.
Yes. Well, that's what you get on shortwave if you're in Africa.
Okay.
Okay, so they were all trying to talk to us in some way or another. I must say, even at the tender age of around 12, I realized that if it's Radio Peking, if we had to fight those people, we'd probably have to shoot our own families if we lose. It's just that the concept of being under that civilization is unthinkable. So with that, I finished off high school. I did my compulsory military training, which I damn near didn't survive, and got to university, finished off my degrees and things. And then when I got to do my master's degree in about 1976, 77, sorry, the promoter for my degree was an American chap. His name was George. I won't mention his name because I don't have clearance from him. But George was what you would today call a blue dog Democrat, a true union guy. His dad had been saved by the Union. His wife would later be saved by the Union. So he was a strong Union Democrat. And it was George who introduced me to the concepts and things behind the United States. It was he who was responsible for my personal love affair with the preamble to the Declaration of Independence. And I put it to both of you and anyone listening that I think the two primary documents for Western civilization, that list does not really include the Magna Carta. What it includes is the preamble to the Declaration of Independence and the Bible. That's far more simple to understand. So much for the Brits. I'm not impressed on that. Okay, but I do have to tell you that I discovered later that preamble is almost verbatim from the Dutch in Holland in the late 1500s when they went up against the Spaniards and they wanted to be independent. So your guys did have access to something to help them write that, okay? It's almost a verbatim translation of the Dutch. From, 200 years earlier. Now, so when I finished my degrees various, I went to the United States. I ended up at IBM at Yorktown Heights in New York, which is now AOC territory of all places. And, there I had to share an office with a Danish professor of engineering. He was my senior by an easy 10 years. So I was a bright and, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed young physicist, PhD, coming to do a post-grad thing at IBM. And he would ask me about South Africa. I'd talk about it. And one day he came at me again and I told him, Aaron, what is it you expect us to do? We're outnumbered 9-1. The whole damn world is against it. No one is helping us with anything. We're all on our own. Okay. What do you want from, what do you expect us to do? And he rose from his seat And he stood up in front of my desk, and he was like a 6'6" or 6'7" guy, long, tall, Viking-type guy. All he still needed was the helmet with the horns. He glowered at me, and he basically spat the following line at me. "You are a sick anachronism. You are a blot on the name of Europe. You should just die."
Wow.
Wow. Very subtle.
He turned on his heat, on his heels, and he walked out the door. Now, he was a classic Northern European communist, what some people these days would like to call a socialist. He wasn't. He actually walked into his own church, and he renounced it in front of the whole assembly there. So a devout communist by principle, not by birth, by principle. Okay. So you can imagine what the conversations between us looked like, because he was making comments about dock workers, and I said to him, "I'll tell you what, I'll drive, I'll put you in the car. We both go down together to the dock workers down in New York on the harbor, and I'll tell them my picture and you tell them yours. We'll see who they agree with." And that's when he said something remarkable that is now resounding all over the world. He said, "Well, of course they'll agree with you. They're stupid." Does that sound familiar? Does that sound like deplorables?
Wow. And, yeah. Garbage. Yeah. Garbage and Republicans.
Yeah. That was said to me by a communist professor in 1979.
Wow.
So that's a calibration point. That's a serious calibration point, because that says so infinitely much more about him than about me. That even at that stage, it kind of stopped me dead in my tracks, and it told me there is some seriously bad stuff on this planet that I was not calibrated for. So, you know, that happened. We eventually went back to South Africa, and I worked in R&D, developing all kinds of stuff, things that go bump in the night in some cases. I have heard from some Russians how the stuff worked that I had helped to create. They were mightily impressed. And so I got some awards for that field. And life went on. And then eventually Mandela became the president of the country. And things became utterly impossible over the next 5 years. So that by the year 2000, I was ready to pack up. My family was ready to move, and we had applied to move to Canada. So I went to a meeting where there was the strangest creature present, and he was they call it cadre deployment. It means a political officer is put in your workplace. Okay? Imagine a country where the Democratic Party has complete control and they are putting political officers in your workplace. That's what we're talking about.
We kind of had Americans that we had a glimpse of their dream of that over the past 4 years. Terrifying.
You need to understand they will do that. You are on the slope to go where I already was. That's why I'm saying I took that bullet for you guys. You don't have to take it anymore. I'm not in President Trump's league. I can just speak with the authority of somebody who has lived this horror. So we had a meeting, and this one of these guys turns up, and he makes a speech about, you know, how my one colleague doesn't have to worry. He'll protect her. I don't know what the hell else. And she told him to get lost in front of everybody else. I thought she was great. She eventually left the country as well. She's living 5 miles away. when that happened, I raised my voice and I told our director, who is a coward, and I told him, "I think we should take a coffee break right now." Okay, so coffee break. And I walk out the door and four of my colleagues come with me. Two of them were black ladies. One was a colored gentleman. Now, colored in South Africa means something different from in the U.S., so don't get all excited. And the fourth one was a South African Indian who had been overseas in exile and had come back. And he was a member of Mandela's party, okay, formally registered member. But I'd done quite a bit of work with him. So I and those four are standing there when this cadre-deployed political officer turns up. And he starts talking to me. I start talking to him. And I told him, why don't you just get rid of our company president? You have completely broken him already. He's, you know, why are you guys messing around like this? And his comment to me in front of those were, you don't understand, Harry. We're trying to get rid of all people like you.
Wow.
Okay. So if you ever want to know what a government plans for you, it's very clear when one of its sent messengers looks you in the eye in front of witnesses of four, you know, four racial groups around him, and he says, you don't get it, Harry. We're trying to get rid of all people like you. Okay? I wish you could have seen the faces of my colleagues. I resigned some weeks later and left the country. But before I could leave, the Indian guy came to my office and he said, Harry, I'd just like to thank you for the way that you have helped me and the way you've worked with me. I have learned to respect you. I want you to know that I wasn't white enough for the previous government, and it's vividly clear I'm not black enough for the present one. If you are interested, I will give you the contact information for all my contacts who helped me internationally. Okay, that coming from a member of Mandela's own party. So that was a calibration point. Anyway, now I've used up a lot of your time and there's not awfully much left. So I would, if you'll allow me, I'd like to get off this calibration point thing.
Sure.
All of which.
Let's do ourselves a favor. How about this? Before we reset, let's take a really quick break and then come back with you to the top of the hour.
Sure.
All righty. Our guest is Dr. Harry Bouyans. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. You're fired, Bill. Took too long.
Oh, sorry.
I got a crazy teacher, he wears dark glasses. Things are going great, and they're only getting better. I'm doing alright, getting good grades. The future's so bright, I gotta wear shades. I gotta wear shades.
That was Harry in school. Hey, I found McDonald's budget printing, by the way. I almost forgot. I'm so bad at that. McDonald's budget printing is at 2647 Bocelli Lane in Redding, California. Phone number is 530-222-0322. You should look them up. They do a great job. There is my free advertising of the week.
Good job, Aaron.
Because I like them. They're very nice. So back to our guest, Dr. Harry Bouyans. Who is now not recalibrating? Are we done calibrating?
Yeah.
What did you say we're done doing?
We're done calibrating. Now you know who's been talking over here, and why I figured I may just have a license to speak.
Nice.
I probably should just say that, yeah, I've had awards from the defense industry and from scientific bodies and stuff like that. That's all cool, and I appreciate that, and it's here in the house. But the nicest thing said to me upon my departure from South Africa was from a young Venda engineer. The Venda are a small tribe in the north of South Africa. This man came up to me, and he's a lay preacher in his own community. And he looked me in the eye and he said to me, Harry, for I have not worked with you for a very long time yet, but I do want to tell you that for a man like you, my people will slaughter an ox. So,
now there's some high praise.
That's quite an honor.
So I'm the guy for whom they wanted to slaughter an ox. Okay.
So if they're going to slaughter a ground squirrel, there's a magnitude of appreciation. Ox is good.
It's a big deal for those folks. Okay.
Yeah. That's cute.
An ox is their medium of trade, so it's a big deal.
Sure.
So I always contrasted that with the Danish professor, you know, like,
yeah,
he's all upset about what he thought we were doing to black people in South Africa, and here is a young black man, and this is what he is saying to me. So there's a little bit of a disconnect here somewhere in between. Okay. So I would like to get onto the subject of why am I so intense about Kash Patel being in this new job? Well, you know, the president, I think, can appoint something like, or at least nominate something like 4,000 positions. I think something like 1,200 have to be confirmed by the Senate. And I guess head of the FBI has to be confirmed, I would imagine. Now, beyond Kash Patel being a guy like me whose ancestry is ex-Africa and not wanted there, as you heard very vividly, there's also something else. One of the jobs that he will have to do is something that you may have heard Matt Gaetz refer to. There is a clip hanging around the internet of Matt Gaetz saying, we have to investigate NewsGuard. There is a reason why I believe Kash Patel needs to focus down on NewsGuard very, very quickly. And I have to give you and your listeners the background on that. In the early 90s, Nelson Mandela was sold to the United States, and they bought him lock, stock, and barrel as an angel of peace and mercy and all matters good. The main thing for that was a book that was supposed to be an autobiography, but there was really a ghostwriter for that. The ghostwriter was a guy by the name of Richard Stengel. Richard Stengel worked for Time magazine. And he married a South African lady, had kids then. In fact, his eldest had Mandela as godfather. So please understand how close this relationship is.
Yeah.
Okay. Make no mistakes about these things. Richard Stengel returned to Time magazine after getting the book published. But what nobody realized at the time, that it only came out much later, he had removed all references to the fact that Mandela was part of the leadership of the South African Communist Party. He'd removed all of that. He had sterilized the book so that there's no connection there. In fact, there's a little page where it's almost turned into a mockery, where he kind of pretends Mandela's laughing about the white South Africans being worried about him being a communist when nothing's further from the truth. Well, the day that Mandela died, the South African Communist Party rushed to the microphones to announce that he had always been at the heart of the leadership of the party. Richard Stengel, as ghostwriter, knew very well that if he included that truth in the book, it would have sold like a lead balloon in the United States. He knew that. I knew that. You all know that. So was produced your Angel of Peace. And I know a lot of Americans hear me say this and they just cannot bring themselves to believe this. So my comment to you is, your brains have been done in by Richard Stengel ever since the early 90s. So where is he now? Well, I'd like you to know that Obama appointed him as his propaganda chief. Not my words, those were Richard Stengel's own words. His own words. He said, I was appointed as Obama's propaganda chief. And then he adds, he said, by the way, I believe government propaganda is a good thing. Okay?
By the way.
Yeah. Okay. So you can hear this guy speak. You can look him up on Google and YouTube and you can see that. So he created, apparently he says he got a phone call from Hillary one night to say, you got to get going on this thing. We've got to counter all these Russian bots and things. So she got this Russian bot thing on the brain for quite a while. Because she's always referring to it. Like she's heard a phrase, Russian bot. So if it's pink and wobble, she calls it a Russian bot. It just irritates me. So.
And they're from Moldova, usually.
Yeah. And he created a thing called the Global Engagement Center. Did you guys know that you've got a Global Engagement Center? It's part, I think, of the State Department.
Isn't that great?
It's to engage the globe. Of course, it's not
what could
your
go
propaganda.
Wrong?
It's not your propaganda department.
No.
I mean, here's Harry. You know, he's the kid who listened to Voice of America without realizing he was listening to the CIA, right? Back then. So, please, man, I'm gray and old and full of it, and I've been around. I have dealt with, met with the CIA. I have met the KGB. I have met the South African security people. I have not met CSIS here in Canada yet. So I've run into this world of these things, and each of those is a story in its own right. But so he created the Global Engagement Center, and then they decided that they really have to do something about countering all this horrible untruths about ivermectin and about how Russia was wrong, and anything that anybody on the right of the spectrum says is obviously per definition wrong, evil, and must be countered. I'm being sarcastic.
It's true. And interestingly enough, I mean, it almost became a stamp of approval. Depending on who said it, like, it's kind of funny. I just happened to pop into, I was looking for something with Richard Stengel to add to the page for today just a second ago. And lo and behold, on MSNBC, John Bolton, obviously a bastion of conservative thought, compares Kash Patel to Stalin's right-hand man after Trump's FBI nomination. That's the headline.
Why do you think that collection of
classic
central neocons are so? I mean, my calibration on the neocons comes from 1998, when I read their, what do you call it, their memorandum of what they aim to do for the future, it was called a Project for a New American Century. And it had all the right names, okay? Cheney was there, Wolfowitz was there, Ahmed Chalabi was there, Kagan was there. They were all there, and they were making it quite clear that if one, the U.S. has won the Cold War, now it must establish world hegemony. How those guys got married with the Democrats, Lord in heaven can only understand, because I don't.
Yeah.
Somehow they figured, get Liz Cheney in, she's going to save their party. So my point is this. If you now go and look at what did they do, the thing they established to control the media is a thing called NewsGuard. You may in fact have it on your mobile phone. You better check whether you've got NewsGuard, because NewsGuard monitors for you whether the news is correct or not correct. It gives it brownie points and evil points and Pinocchio points, all kinds of cool things. And of course, companies will then deal with NewsGuard behind the scenes to make sure that they cool with NewsGuard and get 100% correctness score. Guess what happens? If you're on the left, you get 100%. If you're on the right, you can't get past 40. So, who is really on top of this thing? There's two innocent idiots. One is called Stephen Brohl. The other one is Gordon Krovitz. They supposedly are the founders. That's not where you should look. You should look at the list of so-called advisors. I notice that they are not being called board members. I have a running battle here with Microsoft Copilot about that.
you and Microsoft Copilot, just for people who want to enjoy that, I actually did pull that across from the last show we did with you. So let's see, I should have said this all along, but it's December 1st, 2024 when we're airing this, in case we do this again on a different day. But I did pull across your using propaganda against Americans, where you asked Copilot and transcribed what they told you. I did put that on here, and it has all the links to Richard Stengel for those people who don't know what that is, and for all these, you know, there's always way more on NewsGuard than any of us will have time to go through. But I would like to do a show just about that one time if we could.
So here's the point. You remember the letter with the 51 leaders of the security field and all that, and how
they all
blah,
said
blah,
it was
blah, blah, blah,
yeah
blah,
it was a yeah. Russian whatever yeah
Russia. Okay, anybody here remember General Michael Hayden?
I don't think so.
Ex-chief of CIA, ex-chief of NSA. Okay. Anders Rasmussen, Secretary General of NATO. And the Honorable Richard Stengel that I just mentioned, founder of the Global Engagement Center and author of Mandela's book, Obama's Propaganda Chief. And wait for it, for all of you who have ever tried to add something to Wikipedia, Jimmy Wales, the founder of Wikipedia. Those are the advisors to NewsGuard. You're being messed up by the head, folks.
Yeah.
Okay? So, please understand what NewsGuard is. It is a monitoring system that slowly bleeds the right to death by affecting the advertisers, affecting the channels that people talk on, etc., etc. So NewsGuard is a machine created by an Obama appointment who's very proud of that role. Okay? And his calibration is Nelson Mandela, for whom he BS'd the American population. And he's so into Mandela that Mandela was his eldest son's godfather. You guys think South Africa is not connected to the U.S. by the umbilical? You're going to have to drink cold water and think again.
Yeah.
This is why I sit here as a grizzled old 71-year-old ex-South African guy, and I'm telling you, you have no idea what you just dodged. And I'm telling you, you better back up Cash Patel while he takes these guys down.
Absolutely. What a great way to end. We got to take a really quick exit here. Stage left. Our guest has been Dr. Harry Bouyans. Thank you so much for listening. You've been listening to We the People Radio.us. We'll be back at you next week.
We're the children of explorers. We came here from every corner. The adventurers that settled this land. We led the world, fought tyranny, touched the stars, brought liberty. Let's do that again. On the